This episode of the Hard Drive DL is brought to you by our friends at Napa Auto Parts. Conquer the job with Napa know-how.
You're listening to Hard Drive DL, available at harddriveradio.com or download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app.
Hey everybody, Paulie here in the Hard Drive Studios, joined now by Don Broco from the UK. Guys, thank
Hello.
You so much.
Hey,
yo,
what's up?
We got Rob, we got Simon, and we got Matt. Guys, first of all, welcome to the United States. It's great to have you here. You've been touring here for just about a month now, is that
correct?
Yeah,
a month, yeah.
How are you liking it?
Yeah, loving it. It's been, I think, one of our favorite tours we've ever done. And, yeah, we wanted to come out to the States for a long, long time, and it's kind of lived up to all expectations, so it's been great.
Good. Is there nothing's disappointing about it at all? Like,
I don't think so. I mean, I guess we're kind of like, now we've been, it's just over a month, and we've had, like, probably a heavy rotation of barbecue, fried chicken and burgers like every day, and now it's starting to be like, oh, you know, but I mean, that is just kind of being on tour anyway, but I think there's something like extra delicious about American food, which is like how salty and sugary it is, which is amazing. But
I mean, we could go for the healthy option.
You can't
city's got like that speciality, and like, you know, you can't miss it. Like, this place has the best fried chicken, it has the best pizza or whatever, so we end up just like every night just having regret, just going
so yeah. But apart from that, which is actually a good thing as well, I think it's amazing.
Do you tend to gain weight when you're on the road because you eat?
It's kind of a mixture of two things. I think we kind of, you know, you burn it off when you're on stage and you're sort of, you know, jumping around and doing your thing. It's kind of more, I think it's like it's a different kind of weight, isn't it?
we're eating a terrible meal every day. Like, we'll have the most indulgent barbecue meal, but we'll only probably eat one meal a day because our day is so out of whack with a normal routine. So we eat one heavy dose of terrible food, but it probably isn't as much food as we should eat over the whole day.
Yeah, it would be interesting. When we get back home, I mean, I wish I had like weighed myself or done that sort of thing, like a before and after pic. I think next time we tour, we should do that because it would be interesting.
Oh, yeah, totally. Or depressing.
Yeah.
When you get back home, what's the first thing you're going to eat?
I'm really looking forward to just, I mean, not that you can't not get it here, but like my favorite like snack at home is like kind of weird, developed into celery and peanut butter. And I just crave it. Like, I used to, I don't know, I started having it as a snack when I was at home. And I mean, here, my main peanut.
Have you been pregnant?
My main like source of peanut butter here is Reese's Reese's cups.
I think I've eaten a Reese's peanut butter cup every day.
Every day, yeah.
At least.
Peanut butter's big here. Like, it's crazy big here compared to what it is in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, I could get peanut butter here if I wanted. It's just like the actual, you know, having it on the bus and it being like just every kind of food thing you end up bringing on the bus ends up getting a little bit like moldy, and like if you find hairs in it and stuff like that, you don't really want to bring anything that's going to last too long on the bus. We had a clear out on our fridge yesterday, and there was like some meat that someone had bought on the first day, and some was it aubergine or something?
It was like a molding cucumber in a bag.
Tour manager's called,
If you can imagine the shape of a cucumber in a plastic bag when it's gone off, there's a lot of speculation around what that actually was.
Could have been anything.
Yeah, it could have been anything.
So, yeah.
How do you guys like to pass the time on the road between stops?
I think there's not a load of time, really. You know, most of the dates this tour, we've been pretty much sort of like going to bed, waking up in the next you know city. We've been lucky enough to do this tour on a bandwagon, which we'd never been on before, and it's very bumpy, so you don't really get much sleep, but you are still in your bunk kind of, you know, trying to sleep. And then once we get to like, you know, the next city, I think because it's our first time here, we've been really trying to kind of do the touristy thing and getting out there,
get out there, get into the place,
seeing as much of you know, the different towns we're in as we can.
Is the bandwagon a step up or a step down for you guys?
I mean,
Depends,
I mean, yeah.
We really longed out the process in the UK because we bought a van when we first started the band, and we were determined to drive the thing into the ground. So we were in that van for like the longest time, and I managed
until it literally gave up.
Yeah, they'd always be saying, "Oh, guys, you should get a bus to do this tour. It makes more sense. You've got so many crew now." And we'd be like, "No, we've still got the van, and it still goes." So we're determined to squeeze every penny out of it. So we haven't actually been on buses in the UK for that long, so it still kind of feels like, oh wow, awesome, we're on something that we can sleep in. It's still got that novelty factor for us. So yeah,
what was the final nail in the coffin for that van?
It was the the engine was still good for it. But the bodywork was so rusted, there were big holes in the compartment so you could watch the road going past underneath you. And at that point,
if
it was
like, if you
dropped
anything on the floor, it was a goner. It would just be on the motorway. Yeah. You'd never see it again.
So it didn't pass its last MOT on bodywork.
I just remember one time when we were loading some equipment in the back and, like, basically the wheel arch came out. A sheet of metal. Yeah. And we were like, oh.
So we taped a plastic bag over the hole with some gaffer tape.
That lasted about a year. Yeah. That plastic bag.
The glamour of rock and roll, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. That's how you do it. For those of us in the States who are woefully unfamiliar with your band, it's about time we're catching up here. Give us a little background on how you guys got together.
We were friends from school. Matt and Simon have known each other since they were, five?
Four, yeah.
Aww. and then I joined their school when I was, 11 or 12, and we kind of been playing in bands since then. You know, like, we'd meet up in, you know, lunch break and jam and in the common room, whatever, or in the music school. And after we finished school, we always wanted to start the band and kind of took it from there, and took a few years sort of getting off the ground. We went to university and then came back and just played as many shows as we could basically in the UK. And eventually got to a point where...
Yeah, we played a lot of shows to no one.
Yeah, probably way too long. It took us a while to wise up to the kind of fact that... I mean, everyone says you should play every show you should, and there's definitely part of me that agrees with that. There's definitely part of me that
now
doesn't.
We were playing
shows
before we even had songs to play. It was kind of...
We were playing shows with, we thought, okay, we're in a band. What do bands do? They play shows. We've written a song. So we'd have one song, maybe... four cover songs and a load of songs without lyrics that I'd make up lyrics on the spot on the night.
That's kind of mumbling.
And if I didn't have lyrics, I just, make sounds that sort of resembled maybe lyrics in another language. But yeah, we did that for a few years, sort of slowly kind of built our name up in the UK, managed to sort of sign up with our management team who we're with now and a label. And, you know, we've wanted to get out to the US for so long. We've been waiting for the right American label to come around, and then we signed with a new American label last year, Sharptone Records. So it's great.
How is that signing with Sharptone? How has that changed things for you guys?
Yeah, big time.
It's meant we can tour for a start, which is amazing.
It's been quite a dramatic change, really, because we were Sony in the UK, and we were quite UK focused at the time. That was kind of the agenda of the label, and it worked really well for us back home. But when Sharptone came along, you can just feel the shift in mentality that it's very much a worldwide focus. And interestingly, Sean, the head of the label, actually discovered us playing Guitar Hero.
Yeah,
it's quite a cool story. That's how he heard of the first song he heard of ours. And just it's been awesome. Those guys are super passionate about music. It's a new label with a small but dedicated team. And, it looks like it should be an exciting time ahead.
For us, I think, don't want to slag off Sony because they are great. And, we had a lot of good times with them. But being a major label, there's so much bureaucracy to get things done and sorted. And you've got to go through all these different levels. And, it's amazing being signed to an indie label, We can ring them up straight away and just chat to them about stuff. And, you want to make something happen. We the last single we put out, we recorded it, shot a video and put it out within the space of a few months, which just would not happen, on a major. It takes sometimes years once you've actually recorded the music to then finally get it out to people. So, we're really excited to put more music out with them.
Was that single Everybody?
It was Everybody, Everybody and Pretty, actually. So the last two singles, I reckon probably, a month, 2 months from starting to, writing, record, video and out, probably like 2 or 3 months with that. So it's, really rapid fire.
I want to get into that process. was this just like a one-off thing, or are you guys like actually working on a crop of new songs for an album?
Yeah, we're, I mean, everybody, that was just a song that we wrote actually while we were on the road. We were touring the UK and Europe with Bring Me the Horizon. We hadn't had some music out in a while. We had another tour with them coming up, and we thought, wow, it'd be great to have some new music out before that. And kind of in between the tours, even on the tour, we were like using hotel rooms to do vocals and stuff, and we had a day off in, I think, where we were, Cardiff, and recorded drums there, and it just came together sort of while we were on the road, and then we put it out. With the latest song, Pretty, it's kind of a new crop of material. You know, the last few months we've been sort of starting the process going on the new record, and we were just so happy with the song and we just knew straight away it was going to be a fun one to play live as well. We just thought, let's get this recorded first and you know, make it happen. We knew we were coming to the States for this tour, so we thought we'll get out a few days early, shoot a video, because we shot the last video in Athens in Georgia, and we loved those guys who made the video, and thought we'd kind of link the two videos together and just get it out to our fans.
I've been watching both of the videos for you know, Pretty and for Everybody, and it's, I love them so much, and I want to know like where the idea came from. Like, was this somebody came to you with a treatment, or were you guys like, this is what we want to do?
And we really lucked out. We discovered a dude, or he kind of discovered us, to be fair. And it was all crazy random. Our management pitched out the song on a kind of internet forum, effectively, where directors can pitch for anything. And so we threw out a brief, and the brief for the video was, it just needs to be pretty out there. You know, it's very vague. And this guy came back with the Everybody treatment, and our management sent it to us. We're like, wow, this guy's in Athens. Like, that's crazy. This Greek dude wants to make a video for us. And then was like, oh, no, there's Athens in Georgia. So, yeah, I mean, basically the guy sent the idea. It was so comprehensive. He's a great dude called Ben, and his production company, who were based out in Athens, and the idea was fully formed. We didn't have to change a thing. We just read it, and we were like, this guy's got the vision. He knows what he's
crazy
about. He's mental. Like, let's go and do it. And after the first edit came back for Everybody, normally the whole video process is pretty stressful as a band, because you get the first edit back and you watch it, and it hardly ever meets your expectations. Like, what you've got in your head and what you think you shot on the day never quite comes across in the first edit of the video. You go, oh, okay, well, we need to change that scene, and this needs to be tightened up, and this needs to be jigged around. But that first edit for Everybody came back in, and we all just rang each other, and we're like, yo, have you seen it? It's incredible. It's finished. There's nothing to do. It's there. The guy just nails it. So it was a bit of a no-brainer to go back to him and do the next song, because he pitched us a treatment, which is kind of gruesome, I guess, a bit out there. Like, we love Face Off, the movie, and so we instantly kind of felt this kind of connection towards what he was trying to achieve. And yeah, it's literally all him. I wish we could take some credit for it. I'd love to be that creatively minded, but yeah.
Whose idea was it to kind of like troll your fans into like, oh, Tom's getting married?
Oh, that was us. We'll take credit for that one. Yeah.
Yeah, that came about quite organically, really. I think it started, we got sent a Photoshop of Tom and the actress who plays the bride, Sienna. And we thought, well, rather than teasing a video like we've done in the past and most bands do, which is kind of boring, you know, 10 days for the new video and you've got the countdown and, you know, fans know what to expect. We thought, okay, let's just put this photo up and invite people to the wedding, and we can pretend he's having a live stream of his wedding. And then we thought people might actually recognize the actress, so we will keep that quiet. So we had this idea for the live stream, which is kind of weird, really weird in itself. Like, who would really do that? It's crazy. I mean, I could see maybe some celebrities doing that, but somehow our fans bought it. especially Tom as well, because he's a very private person. So I don't know how we got away with that one. But what made it, I think, you know, really happen for us is, we were just, you know, playing Vegas on the tour, and we were going to go out anyway and party in Vegas. So we thought, why not just make this Tom's bachelor party and take a load of photos?
And fully committed.
We committed to the live. I mean, I think
we were wasted.
It's probably the best, like, bachelor party, stag do, as we call them in the UK, that I think I'll ever go on, because we were, you know, properly into it. We were having fun with it, and because we had a purpose of the night. It was like, we've got to make this look as mental as we can, so our fans believe that Tom is actually getting married. And we had a lot of fun.
Yeah, being in a band's a really tough ride. Fake stag do's.
It's a hard business, but, you know, somebody's got to do
exactly.
it, right?
Really?
Somebody's
got to
do it. I think the problem is going to be that, you know, when he has his actual bachelor party, that bar is already set so high.
I know.
High.
Oh, yeah.
He's well aware of that. It probably doesn't get any better than what he's already experienced.
Just take him bowling or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, congratulations. Yeah, be low-key, yeah.
So the video for Pretty, the video for Everybody, these are, you know, a comprehensive package. Are you guys going to, like, stick with it with the releases and just kind of like keep going with these weird narrative stories? Because I would love to see more.
I know. So we haven't really thought that far ahead yet. I mean, as we're writing the album, I think the songs will probably dictate the vibe of the videos, because, I mean, that's the thing. Like, as a band, we're quite varied in our musical styles, and Everybody and Pretty are both very fun live party songs. And some of the songs on the album are definitely a bit more kind of reserved and a bit more, you know, I couldn't see us ripping each other's faces off to...
A love song.
maybe it would work.
The difficulty we've got as well is we've talked about it amongst ourselves, and it's like thinking of an idea which raises the stakes from the extremity of what we did in Pretty feels like a very daunting prospect at this point. Mm. Because that idea, we were kind of, can we get away with doing this? Is it going to be too far? Are people going to dig it, or are they going to be freaked out? And once you cut each other's faces off, it's kind of like, what are you doing in the next video? Like, what's there left to cut off that's going to freak people out?
Yeah, I think once we kind of work out what the singles are going to be and what order we want them in and see if it works together, then we'll kind of address that. But I mean, we would love to do some more with those guys who did the last videos, Dominar, they're called. And we loved working with them, and just the kind of world we created in those videos was a really fun and bizarre kind of thing to be a part of. I'd like to think, even if we don't do it for one single, we could come back at some point
and
just
come back and
start it off. Yeah. Continue.
I want to know who the cowboy is.
Like, yeah. So do I.
Oh, man. So
we talked about an origin backstory.
Yeah.
Like, as a potential idea for a different song, a different video, but we haven't fleshed it out yet.
Yeah, he's definitely the star of the show. Whenever you're in a room with him, like, he's so... he's the nicest dude in the world, but he's so smooth as well. You're standing next to him and you feel like you're next to Charlton Heston or something. It's like, wow, this guy's like a movie star. Look at him. He's just this really cool, chill dude from Athens that likes being part of, you know, anything kind of dramatic.
That's awesome. I want to know, has anybody at the live shows, have they started doing the dance while you play the song yet?
We have had that. Yes. We've had a stage invader come and tried to do that, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have to knock them off?
Someone did.
Someone did. I think they were on for like half the song. The three of them just piled on stage, somehow got past security, jumped up on, and we were just taken back. And it was kind of fun, so we were enjoying it. And then after a while, it was like, can't really move around anymore, and someone got rid of them.
I need to press my guitar pedals. Can't anymore.
But they learned it down. You know, they had it. I mean, I'd kind of forgotten it because they were like, "Rob, do you do it too?" But you can't really do it yourself while you're playing the show. We've seen people do it in the crowd, but once like the mosh pit starts, there's no hope of anyone actually continuing to do it. I think the best thing I've seen is in a club night. There was like a rock club night, you know, DJ thing that someone else was playing, and they sent us a video, and there were like 30, 40 people who'd learnt it in the club just doing it. And, you know, you've got a bit of space then, so you can spread out and really get the moves down, and that was quite nice to see.
That's awesome. So you guys have played to some huge crowds. You know, I was just watching the Reading Festival crowds before, and just like these massive, massive festival crowds, and now you're here in the States, and I'm not quite sure, but I know you're playing like upstate, you know, Music Hall in Clifton, mm-hmm. and that's a small place. Like, are you playing these small club shows now? So is it kind of a switch for you guys to have to, like, do you have to dial it back at all from playing these festivals to playing these tiny little clubs?
I wouldn't say we're really dialing it back. It's kind of, we've always, from when we started back in the UK and we were playing small shows of our own, you know, we always gave everything to a show. We'd always put in, you know, a lot of energy and turn it into, you know, as big a, as an event as possible. And I think maybe now, once we've kind of started doing the bigger stages, you kind of, you maybe make it, you know, you make the show bigger, you know, you'll bring more production and you'll do that side of things, and you might you know, have a few set pieces that you can't always pull off in such a kind of smaller venue. But when it comes to like the intensity and the kind of performance we give, it's always kind of been pretty high octane. And I think for me anyway, I've really enjoyed these shows almost more than the bigger shows. You know, sometimes you get to a certain level where you walk out on stage and it's that amazing feeling as you're playing to thousands and thousands of people, but after a few songs you don't have that same connection as you do with a smaller crowd. And that's kind of what I live for personally, when you can, you know, see people, they're mouthing the words, you can jump down the barrier and, you know, get up front amongst it, and it's all kind of feeling like you're part of this kind of collective rather than you're performing to people. So for me anyway, I really enjoy these smaller shows a lot more. And it's kind of nice as well, like going back to almost the feeling of having to like prove yourself to people.
That's what I've been enjoying.
Yeah.
So you walk out and obviously as a support band, there's going to be people in the crowd who may have heard of you, may not have heard of you. And I love sensing that when we start, there's that sense of curiosity. People are like, oh, who are these guys? I'm quite digging it. What's it all about? And then by the end, you know, if they're jumping up and down or they're clapping after the songs and stuff, like you get that sense of satisfaction. It's kind of cool starting again in that sense in a new territory where you you do have that sense that you have to prove yourself, and that motivation just sort of reignites your love for it, I guess.
And you get a better view, you know, being closer to the people, right? Because you're not all the way up on that stage back there.
Certainly from my point of view on the drum riser, some of the big, I mean, we've been fantastically lucky to do some, you know, arena support shows around Europe, and there is a sense that I can't even see the front row sometimes. I can't even, you know, and I like it, like Rob said, like you see the whites of people's eyes, you can actually sense their energy and like the fact that they're enjoying themselves. And otherwise to me it's like playing to a big dark empty room and then, you know, that's cool too, because it looks amazing at points. Sometimes, you know, we've got like a slow song where people will put their lighters in the air or whatever, and that just is an amazing moment, takes your breath away. But, you know, you don't get that just sweaty intensity, which is awesome.
I always feel kind of bad for drummers sometimes, because they're, you know, they're crammed in the back and they always have like these giant kits in the riser, and you can't really see them behind half the stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't think you play with like that big of a kit.
It's quite minimal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've kind of just always done it that way. I mean, a lot of my favorite drummers play with a, you know, similar setup, just one up, one down on the toms, and keep your cymbals quite low, so you feel like you can get in on them, and then you can see out, and you have a line of sight to people.
It's probably a good thing you've got a minimal kit. When we get to that stage when you want a hydraulic kit that takes you out into the crowd,
it'll probably be
a little bit cheaper than the full Lars Ulrich.
I really want a drum riser that actually has legs, like robotic legs, it can actually get around, you know. not just one that turns upside down, you know, we've seen all that. I want one that I can like walk down the gangway,
like that thing from Wild Wild West, Will Smith.
Yeah that's the dream.
Spider
rose. Any budding engineers, get in touch.
For all our fans in MIT listening, get on that. Matt, you're also kind of unique among drummers in that you do a thing that few of them can do, which is sing and drum at the same time,
with varying success.
When did you like first give that a shot and figure out like, oh hey, I could actually pull this off?
Well, it's actually, singing was sort of my first sort of interest in like live music. And when we all sort of got into music at the same time when we were at school together, as Rob's mentioned, and we all started picking up instruments at the same time. And actually, my very first sort of school band, I was the vocalist. But as people started picking instruments, you know, people were like, oh, I would like to play guitar, bass, whatever, there were no drummers amongst the group. So I was like, okay, you know what? I'll give it a go. I'll be the drummer. But having been a singer in a small band, and that being kind of my first love, I never wanted to give it up. So whenever I was playing drums, I was always like, oh, you know, I'll do the backing vocals. Give me the vocals. Give me the vocals. So just at first, obviously, I just sucked at both equally. And then gradually over time, sucked less and less and less. But, you know, from what I understand, speaking to other drummers, it wasn't my experience. But if you try and add the singing later, like you get really proficient as a drummer and then add the singing, it's actually a lot more difficult than if you just stick with it from day one and always try and always kind of build that sort of like the connection between your brain, your muscle memory and the vocal. So I guess that's how it came about. But I would never want to stop singing because singing was kind of what brought me to music in the first place.
Good, good. So you guys are wrapping up this tour in a few days. What's next on the schedule for you?
Yeah, we get back like a week after. We're actually spending like a little bit of time in New York. So we did the last show's in Boston, and then we thought, while we're out here, let's kind of, you know, explore. It's nice to be over here and have some time. So then we get back just in time for Slam Dunk Festival, which is like a big kind of alternative rock kind of punk festival back in the UK. And then we're gonna basically spend the rest of the summer writing the new album. So it's kind of all about that. I think most weekends we've got festivals in Europe.
Yeah, it's our first Rock Am Ring and Rock Am Park in Germany. Doing Lollapalooza in France.
Yeah, Pinkpop.
Pinkpop, so go to Netherlands and Luxembourg, and got loads of cool EU festivals coming up throughout the summer, a lot of which we haven't done before, so we're really excited about them.
Have you thought about where you want to record the album?
Well, we've kind of been doing it as we've been going, which has been interesting, this process. You know, rather than just like leaving it all to the end, we've kind of, you know, as we've been writing songs, we've been kind of recording them to a good level as we've been doing it, which is quite nice. So when we actually record it, you know, finished, I think a lot of it we can use already, which is quite nice. We spent some time in a studio called Vader, which is in kind of near the Cotswolds in the UK, which is the first kind of time. Actually, no, I mean, we spent a fair amount of time on Automatic in a residential studio, but it feels like the first time in a while that we've been out of like London and our homes and doing it kind of DIY style.
Proper in the countryside, away from it all. And
because a lot, I mean, it's amazing, you know, these days you can record so much stuff yourself. You know, a lot of Pretty, for example, Simon just, you know, was doing on his laptop, and, you know, it sounded so good. We were like, let's keep it. Some of the synth stuff and a few sort of
bass parts,
and some of the like really kind of like rough and ready guitar sounds that Simon just like whacked in and was like, you know, did it as a demo. We were like, wow, this has got such a vibe to it. You can't recreate that when you try to.
And the vocal sample at the start of the song in the intro was me singing into the internal mic on my Mac.
Yeah.
That I sent to Si, and then he played with.
But yeah, the
studio magic.
Yeah, when you want to record like decent drums and stuff, you know, that's when you want to go to a good studio. And yeah, it was nice. We spent a few weeks there doing Pretty and starting on a few other songs, and you can just sort of get out of the hustle and bustle of, you know, the city and do that there. So we'll probably go back there. Yeah.
Before we wrap up, we always like to ask, you know, the horror stories from the road, the Spinal Tap moments where, you know, everything just goes wrong. You get lost backstage. No, you know, you don't even have a pass to get in.
Like, yeah.
What's your Spinal Tapian moment?
I mean, there was, I didn't even tell you guys, there's one I was super late for the show. It was like a real Spinal Tap moment where I'm always the latest to,
I always leave it last minute. Four of us stood by the side of the stage and we're like, where's Rob?
I quite like the pressure.
And it's like 1 minute past stage.
Like
time.
The adrenaline of, right, we've got to get like in the zone. And so to do that, I sort of take my in-ears in and get ready like way later than everyone else. And then there was this one show where I think after these guys had come in the back door, the security guard had closed it. So I had to run around like the whole entire building, go through the crowd to sort of work my way in, and it was, yeah, that was a scary moment. We never spoke about it actually, because that was the show, I think, where your guitar cut out. Was it Atlanta? Was the Atlanta one?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, so I never even told you guys how stressful it was for me. But I mean, Have we ever had anything where anything goes completely wrong?
We had one in Europe, the first European tour we did, and we had this really kind of long intro. And it was like a kind of tracked intro, so you were off stage and the intro starts playing and you want to come out, Big Balls, yeah. You know, we're here now, prepare for some real music. And my guitar tech hadn't switched my amp on, so I went to play the first chord of the song, I just hit the guitar and there's nothing, and I started that song, so the intro ended and I'm meant to come in and there's nothing, I'm standing there like the world's biggest douchebag. And the worst part was, because the intro was basically on the same track as our click track, which we have in our ears to keep us nice and in time, when we were on stage, we had to tell the crowd, okay, Simon's guitar amp isn't on, and we can't skip into this track, so we're going to have to play the entire intro again while we stand on stage and just get through it. Yeah, it was horrible.
It was like 2 minutes long.
It was 2 minutes long, yeah.
Stood there for 2 minutes. Like,
And then came in, yeah. So that was pretty awkward.
Sounds pretty bad.
Not Eindhoven, I believe.
Eindhoven, yeah, that's the one.
All right, so the album is Automatic. It's out in the US now. New album is on its way.
Yep.
Hopefully this year.
We'd hope like end of the year, maybe start next year, but yeah.
All right, the single now is Pretty. Don Broco here on Hard Drive, guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Awesome.
Cheers.
Sweet.
You're listening to Hard Drive DL, available at harddriveradio.com or download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app.